Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Good morning, early call time.
Hi.
Sometimes I just like hearing my voice in the radio.
I do too. There are people that say they don't like hearing their voices.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, you're a narcissist.
That's true.
For what it's worth, I like hearing both of your voices.
Oh.
It's worth a lot.
That's
it's worth a whole lot.
That's Matthew Davis across the way.
Hello.
Cool.
He's a freelance writer. And he currently works on the show Scorpion for not too much longer. We're almost done for the season.
Yeah, we had our last day of filming yesterday, so it was an exciting day. And now we get to finish up the post-production process, your forte.
Yep. Now, are you on the DVD commentary? Did I read that right on Facebook?
I did my first DVD commentary interview yesterday.
So that's really cool.
Wow.
That was very... I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm on a hot streak here. Back-to-back interviews going on. This is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did they talk about in the interview?
We talked about... I did the Scorpion comic book for a Comic-Con last year. So that was a
No Space Like Home?
Yes.
Yeah.
We got a fan, my one fan.
What was the comic book?
So the comic book, we kind of wanted to do something big for Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's such a huge event. And we have a lot of fans that come to the con, and it's our second year in a row. We wanted to give them something big, something huge. So the comic book was essentially, what can we do that we can't do production-wise normally? So we sent our guys to space, because that's impossible to film on a television budget.
That's so true. What did they do in space?
Oh, what didn't they do? We threw the kitchen sink at these guys.
But it floated at them really slowly.
It did, yes. Well, the main storyline was created this satellite called the ARC satellite. It was basically a rail cannon designed to destroy any incoming meteors or, you know, comets, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
The system on board went rogue. Mm-hmm. So then it, of course, aims itself at the planet. And
sure.
Chaos would ensue. We have, right. You know, 48 hours to get there and stop it. And our guys are the only guys that can do it. We can't do it remotely. We have to do the override there in person. So we sent them up into space. There's a solar flare. We have some space debris. There's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff to deal with.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, did you write it as a regular episode and then kind of converted it into a comic book?
It's funny that you say that because this is the first time I'd ever done a comic. And I had to do a bunch of research on how to do it. My boss, Nick Santora, who's the showrunner and creator.
I hate that guy.
He is... Wow,
what a
hack. Is he going to listen? Because I can't...
He might. I don't know.
Well, then I love him. He's so great to work for. No, he actually is really great to work for. He's given all of us at the lower level opportunities to showcase our stuff. And
awesome.
I was given an episode this year. He gave me the comic book. So, you know, he is really great to work for. But backtracking, what were we saying?
Oh, about the development of the comic
book.
There
we go.
Yeah.
There was a point, but now I don't remember what it was.
How did you put together the
thank
story?
You. Yes. So, did the research. He had actually done some comics in the past, so he gave me some of his stuff to read. Yeah, it's some really cool stuff. Nothing like too mainstream. It's more his personal projects that he's working on, but some really, really cool stuff that I'm actually not allowed to talk about because it's top secret. But
yeah.
Or maybe I just forgot what it was and I wanted to make it sound better. No.
There are no comic books.
Yeah. So did the research and I turned in a 42-page script, which is almost the size of a television script, about 10 pages, 13 pages short. And it was for a 12-page comic book. So it was probably a little overwritten.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was better to have more than not enough, I say. But the real challenge was 12 pages of a comic book is not a whole lot.
No,
it's
short.
Yeah, and so panel-wise, you know, I was when the research I was doing initially, I had seen like The Walking Dead, you can get up to, I believe it was 24 panels mm-hmm. on a page, which I was like, oh, great. Then we can tell this crazy story of an hour long episode in 12 pages. But, you know, the company we worked with, IDW, who were fantastic, they're like, we typically do 6 to 8 panels on a page. Eight is like the very, very most we'll do.
Yeah.
So that turned into a little bit of a challenge, but it really, really came out great. Everybody, we worked with a couple people at CBS, Veronica Hart and Risa Kessler, and Tom Waltz at IDW, who's the head guy over there. And it came out great. The fans just lost their minds over it. We had a nice autograph signing with the cast. Well, I was supposed to be part of it, and I was so excited. So I go to the con, and I'm like, oh my gosh, my first autograph signing session. And then we had like two of the actors who they didn't think were going to be able to come actually showed up, and wasn't enough room on the autograph line for old Matt Davis. I know, first world problems, right?
So who did the art?
It was actually a gentleman from Argentina, Agustin Padilla. He, I guess, doesn't speak English. I didn't really interact with him too much. It was CBS is kind of the intermediary with IDW. IDW kind of handled, so like CBS handled me in a way, and IDW handled the artist. So because CBS was bringing me to the table and IDW was bringing him to the table.
Right.
So it basically, I handed in a script. Then as I was handing material in, Augustine was then doing basic storyboarding type stuff on what the scenes would look like, which is a really cool process because there's a lot of steps along the way. It's not just, you know, you submit the draft and then they do the art.
Yeah.
It's piece by piece. It starts coming together. And then from the panels and stuff that he would draw, I would then give notes and kind of try to steer him towards the vision that I had for the comic, which was pretty close to what he was putting on the page, which was really nice. There wasn't a whole lot of crazy notes to be given, but.
So in a way that's like you were the writer and he was the director. I mean, in a,
yeah, because
in television, the writer's giving director
right
notes.
In television, I've been told that the writer is king.
Right.
In television. In the feature world, it is definitely not the case. You are the court jester, if
best.
You're lucky.
Yeah.
And the director is king.
Right.
So this was kind of, I guess, like a happy medium, you could say. It was still, I would say, probably closer to the television reign where I had creative control of what he was putting on the page.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more of a collaborative effort, I believe.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Now, you wrote the episode. It was the earthquake episode. And sometimes
Fractured.
That's what.
Yes. Yeah. I love earthquakes.
It's a fun episode.
It was a lot of fun. Yes. Yeah. We had a lot of big explosions and action set pieces. And the thing with this episode that was so important was that it was the day after the Super Bowl, and CBS had the Super Bowl this year, so they had a lot of heavy promos for all their shows, and thankfully we were lucky enough to get, I think, 2 or 3 commercial spots for it. So they wanted something like huge, action-driven, very, very akin to The Pilot, which was a very action-driven episode. Mm-hmm. You know, we have such great, dense characters, and our writers do such a wonderful job really bringing those guys to life, and the fans just lose their minds over, you know, the great relationships that we have. So the characters are already fleshed out enough that we were able to kind of get away with making this one a little more action heavy as opposed to character driven.
That's cool.
But we still did, of course, stay true to the character stories. And we had a nice bit between Toby and Walter where Toby's very self-destructive. He's got everything he wants, essentially. He finally has the woman of his dreams, but he has this self-destructive streak, and he is essentially sabotaging his relationship with A, his boss, and B, his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that play out, and you see that there's like this moment of guilt where Walter can't tell, like Walter thinks that he's doing something wrong. He's not able to put his finger on exactly what the issue is. And then you see Toby look back. They're trying to sift through this rubble to get to this gas line before it explodes and sets all of LA into
on fire.
Yeah, that would ruin somebody's day.
Yeah,
but he has this part where he pauses and he looks back, and it's just this really nice character moment, and you realize right then and there that Toby knows it's him. It's not anything Walter's doing. It's just him sabotaging himself. So
yeah,
I can relate.
Can you?
Yeah.
What have I sabotaged?
No, I'm sabotaging myself.
Saboteur.
Yeah.
My bad.
So you guys need to have like a cave in somewhere and
yeah.
pull some rocks out and come together.
Deal with our issues.
Yeah.
And you pitched that story idea to now did when you pitched the idea, did you pitch it to Santora?
Yes, so back to what I was saying, Santora
Nick
Santora, yes, being a great guy to work for.
Nicholas
R. Santora. I don't know if I can reveal his middle name here without him.
Roberto,
yes.
Yeah.
Roberto, no, it's not Roberto, but...
Rebecca.
Nicholas Rebecca
Santora. He's going to kick your ass.
He's going to probably kick mine.
I love him.
He is a great guy. But that's one of the great things about him is he enables the lower level, the assistants, he takes ideas from everybody and anybody along the way. If somebody's got a good idea, that's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who works hard and wants to, you know, foster a career in writing is somebody he's always going to champion. And so he was always taking ideas from us, and I pitched, I can't tell you how many ideas I pitched. But one finally struck a chord, and it was an earthquake episode. And our team has a few episodes where we go up against the elements, and they're really great episodes. We have one in the Antarctic, which is fantastic. We have a tornado one. We have several more I can't think of right this moment. But our team really shines in those man versus nature type of episodes.
Yeah.
So I pitched, my initial pitch was actually had to do with an earthquake in a mall, like around Christmas time, and they were doing some Christmas shopping or holiday shopping, and the earthquake strikes, and you know, some of the problems that would arise from them being in a crowded area and some mm-hmm. of the stuff
That's
they
cool.
had to do. Yeah. But we had to, we had already had a holiday Christmas idea episode mm-hmm. already on the books.
Was that the Saving Santa Claus episode?
It was the Dam episode.
In Antarctica?
What was it called? Dam Dam?
It was initially Dam Dam. I don't remember what it was changed to. Maybe it stuck as Dam Dam, but I think it did change to something else.
Yeah,
but
I could see that. For being a Christmas episode, it makes sense to be something else. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Holy Dam.
Yeah.
Oh, Holy Dam.
Oh,
Holy
oh,
Dam.
Man, that would have been good.
Yeah. We have some great titles, though. We have Djibouti Call.
Nice.
Which is probably the highlight. I think that was a David Foster.
That's strong.
One of our great writers, David Foster.
The Doctor.
The Doctor. The Doc. I'm gonna toot my own horn here. And we had Chernobyl Intentions was one of our...
Genius.
Our second to last. That was my one crowning achievement with the show.
This time the episode will have aired. So
yes,
yeah, yeah. May 3rd.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This is when this one's.
Oh okay, yeah. So we have some time. So yeah. Tune in retroactively.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Watch the DVR.
Time machine.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did. I named one of our episodes in our first season because we couldn't. We tried to break the story like six times, and it just wasn't happening. And it was so frustrating that finally when we got it, they're like, what are we going to call this one? And I just I said, finally. And they're like, cool. And it had nothing to do with the episode whatsoever. But they were just so sick of talking about it that it was like.
Had enough at that point.
Sure. That's the Dr. Zuber episode.
Oh, nice.
I think. Yep.
The Dr. Zuber. Yeah. As we've kind of talked about it before, you work for Santora.
Correct, yeah.
And you're working as his assistant right now.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about how that happened, that he, you know, gave you the opportunity to freelance write an episode?
Sure, yeah. So basically, now I'm not completely understanding of the rules with the WGA, but the WGA has a policy with TV shows that and this is to foster new talent, to bring about a new generation of writers, I think, for the most part. But they have these freelance episodes that they encourage the studios, the networks, and the shows to do. And I believe it's 2 freelance episodes for 24 episode or 22 episode season, yeah. Whatever it is. And they, I guess they used to fine the shows if they would not give out. Because, you know, some shows, it's important to, you know, like especially a young show. They don't want to just hand the reins over to somebody coming in off the streets, you know, that who could be a fantastic writer, but it's so important to get that show off the ground, and you only have X amount of episodes to do it, and you're handing one over to somebody who's not in the writer's room, who might not just be brand new to the show in general. So that's a lot of work they have to do, and you got to make sure that they're getting the vision and everything down. But with that being said, thankfully I was part of the show already. I knew the characters, and you know, I've been there since the pilot. So I,
you were actually in the pilot, weren't you?
I was in the pilot. And you, it's funny when you asked me to send a picture of myself today. I just found some pictures on Facebook because I never take pictures of myself really. And there's a picture that I posted of when you and I were some of the lineup suspects, and I think it was like 106.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were right next to me. I was like, oh, I should send him that picture. Yes, I was in the pilot on the plane wearing a green plaid shirt for those who want to take the time to go back and look.
Because people were cheering at the when we were watching it at the premiere party.
Yes.
And someone pointed out that you were on. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's awesome.
That's funny because I assisted our showrunner on our pilot, and I was in the pilot of our show as well. So that's the way to become an actor.
Yeah, that's Tom Cruise got into Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks. It's a it's a Tom thing.
Tom Cruise was in the pilot of The Cosby Show.
Yes, he was the one who supplied Bill Cosby with the roofies.
The roofies, yeah.
Yeah.
He played Theo Huxtable's best friend, Marvin.
Marvin.
Well, speaking of acting, you are an actual actor as well, right?
Well,
did you start off acting?
I was a theater major. I wanted to act, but okay. Here's a terrible.
What school
story
did you go to?
Nobody cares
just
about.
Bring everything.
All right. Now we love it.
So I went to University of Central Florida. I was dating a girl for like almost 3 years, and we were both theater majors. And no disrespect to theater majors, but a theater degree is what I had perceived at the time. If you're not going to become an actor with it, you're basically going to be teaching theater.
Right.
And that's just something I had no desire to do.
Yeah.
So I changed my major to marketing and kind of let myself go a little bit. And, you know, just one of those things I was like, I think acting has passed me by. But I always had a passion for the entertainment industry. It's something I knew I always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, what the heck? Let's give writing a try. I love being creative. I love world building. I love character building. And there's something about going to a 2-hour movie and just, you know, going to the theater and escaping for 2 hours. And it's just the best feeling. And if I could have any sort of hand in giving that to somebody else, it would be a great feeling. So that's kind of
what are some of your favorite movies? I know one.
Well,
maybe two.
You know me.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this: the movie that really inspired me to get into the entertainment industry was Braveheart. It's the first movie that I've ever watched that I immediately watched again right after I watched it. It was so impactful.
It's a long movie too.
I know.
Yeah.
I had a lot of time on my hands back then. You know, I was a young 20-something year old who, or maybe even younger than that. I don't want to.
How old are you now? Because I remember seeing Braveheart in the theaters. Unless you don't want to admit how old you are.
I was young.
I'm 38 now, but I think.
Okay. I was in middle school when it came out, and I'm 34.
I was going to say.
I think I was in eighth grade.
In high school. Yeah, so that was.
I saw it at a drive-in.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
It was a
double
feature.
Like with a real car and everything.
Yeah, double feature. It was that and Johnny Mnemonic.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Was that like 94 then?
Back on the Johnny Mnemonic?
No, we didn't pay for it. As there with my friends.
I think it was like around 94 then. 94?
Something like that.
Yeah. I think so.
It's a great movie though.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's just from top to bottom, the music, the acting, the story, the entrails. I mean,
yeah.
I wept.
Strong entrails.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, how could you not?
Yeah.
Never take our freedom. And just the music hits and you're like, you get the, somebody's cutting onions. It's a mess. It's a mess. So the Braveheart was, you know, one of my inspirations, but Star Wars is the defining movie of my life. As you see, my wardrobe is nothing but Star Wars t-shirts and,
Santoro was giving us shit about it the other day.
Star Wars is the worst thing ever made.
He has a lot of similarities to Santoro. I would like to point out at least three.
Okay.
Doesn't like the Beatles.
Oh my god.
Doesn't like Star Wars.
Oh my god.
Doesn't drink coffee.
Well, I don't drink coffee
and or alcohol. So there's four right there.
Either. So we have that in common.
Yeah.
All right,
but we could never be friends over the Star Wars thing.
That's I've lost a lot of people in my life. My grandparents don't talk to me anymore.
Well, they're dead.
They're dead, yeah. But I feel like it's related somehow.
Yeah, maybe.
My grandma's alive.
Yeah. She asks about me?
All the time.
I know.
She might watch Scorpion. I don't know.
Yes.
My dad
tell
is.
Your grandmother I said hello.
She's single.
Yes.
My dad is a huge Scorpion fan.
Oh, that's
and
great.
Every time I talk to him, he's like, whoa, we loved that last episode of Scorpion. Even when my show's on, he'll refer to it as Scorpion and then start pointing out scenes from an episode of Scorpion. And I'm like, nope, that's not what I work on. And I know that he wants JJ to actually be his kid. He has a Scorpion mug that he drinks from every single morning, and he sends me photos.
That is great. And, episode 216, Fractured, I'm sure was his favorite episode.
Hands down.
All right. Excellent.
Yeah. He called me. He was crying on the phone, and he was like,
I've just seen.
Yeah. He was like, this is like the Sistine Chapel of episodes of television.
You know it's a good show when your father calls you and says, I really like the love triangle that you have between Walter and Paige. And I'm like, excuse me? Is this my father that I'm talking to?
I can't picture your dad saying love triangle.
And me either. Me either.
I can't picture your dad at all because I've never seen him.
Nope.
But
you have not. But anyway.
Well, so your experience in terms of being able to write an episode was... I mean, was it something where you sat down with Nick and you said, like, this is what I want to do? Or was it just, hey, I've got ideas, and eventually it just came around to, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Write it.
Effectively, yeah. He came out to the bullpen one day and had said, you know, we would really like to kind of hear some ideas if you guys have any. So I immediately went to work, and I had kind of like a... National Treasure type of White House episode. Won't get into that just in case we ever wind up using it.
Yeah.
But that seemed to resonate well with him, aside from a couple little details. I came close on a few, but the one that finally hit was this earthquake episode. I think it was just kind of the perfect storm because they needed a big, you know, big action, big something crazy huge problem that happened, and you know, it doesn't get much bigger than an earthquake. So
yeah.
And then from there, you know, I would just, we do these things called story documents, which are basically like a 2 or 3 page synopsis where you go into not crazy depth, but you kind of give broad strokes to the story, the character moments, that sort of thing. And I'd written several story docs of my pitches, and the one that finally resonated was the earthquake one.
That's cool.
So yeah, so I felt very fortunate. The other assistant to the other showrunner, Adrita Mukherjee, also got an episode as well. So they're, like I said, they're just very good about if you work hard and you've got the ability, they'll give you the chance. So.
Yeah, I found that because it was kind of similar for me, and it was just putting that effort out there. And, you know, if I had ideas, sending them off to the showrunner and saying, here's kind of a pitch that I've been working on. And even if it's not something they went with, it was they saw that you were putting in the effort.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. But the thing is you have to also make sure – you know, you've got to be lucky enough to be on a show like that. Not all shows, you know, are like that. And thankfully you were on a show that you're lucky enough to do that. I'm on a show that I was lucky enough to have that opportunity. But you hear the horror stories of, you know, I worked on other shows and I, you know, obviously I won't say what those shows were, but there are assistants and script coordinators that never even sniff the room. And those are horror stories because, you know, those people work hard, those assistants, and they rely on these opportunities to get their foot in the door, to get a chance to shine, to learn. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes into it because, you know, you can write as many scripts as you want, but it's actually getting the hands-on experience, the hands-on learning and training that really allows you to kind of get to the next level and take the next step. And if you don't get that, it's a lot harder than just churning out your own material and hoping something sticks to the wall. So, you know, I feel very fortunate that I had the opportunity, and just from start to finish, I learned infinitely more than I thought I had known or could know at that point.
Yeah.
Just being on set, especially like just,
were you on set for your episode?
I was. Yes. That's cool. Yeah. Well, it was nice because, they didn't just throw me to the wolves. They had one of the senior writers, shadow me every day, which was nice because if I had any questions, they would be there to answer, because I had no idea what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I wrote this script and I'll just stand here at Video Village and hope for the best. But, you know, they were great. And I was able to, with their help, I was able to then kind of stand on my own 2 feet, and I was actually calling out things because you're basically like a micromanager as the writer on set. You're quality control.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that everything is jumping off the page as it was intended by the showrunner, by the co-writer, and which was me in that instance. But it was great, really great learning experience. And as JJ knows, our crew is like second to none in the industry. These guys are pros, and
they're very wonderful men. And women.
Women. Yes. Yep. Yes, absolutely.
Yep. It's kind of trippy to be in that position on set and be like, oh, I have a note. And then like everyone stops and you're like, oh, you guys are looking at me.
That's exactly.
Like you're listening to me. This is crazy.
Well, I had the fortunate and unfortunate, and I only say unfortunate because experience of working with Christine Moore. And I say unfortunate only because she is one of the most talented and powerful woman you will ever meet. She is just a wonderful, wonderful person, but she's very, very intimidating. She was
the director?
She was the director, yes. Okay. She knows her stuff inside and out. But for me, a nobody to then approach this, you know, very talented and decorated director and bring a note to her was definitely an intimidating and scary experience, to say the least. But she was wonderful. She still sends me texts and makes fun of me with my Star Wars attire.
All right.
Yeah. So you guys should have that in common.
Yeah, we should hang out.
Shame me with Star Wars jokes.
Spock, what's the deal?
who was the senior writer that shadowed you?
Well, it just depended on the day. Because since we were on location a lot of the episode, just to make it easier, we kind of broke it up. Like if we were on Manhattan Beach Studios and we weren't on location, then we would have one of the writers who lived by Manhattan Beach Studios
come to
set that day. Yes. So David Foster was there a lot, you know, for our stage days. And then on location, I had poor Adam Higgs, who's one of our new writers this year, but extremely talented, taught me so much stuff. He got the short straw and had to shadow me on the last day. So my episode was broken up at our hiatus. Mm. So it was, I think, December 15th.
Mine was too.
Or December 19th, I believe, was our last day of filming. And then we came back after that and sometime in early January. But we had a night shoot because we had this giant explosion, this tower inferno of fire, and we wanted it to look cool, so we changed it to a night shoot. But that unfortunately meant that 10:30, 11 o'clock was when we filmed to, and then poor Adam got stuck. Instead of getting to go home and see his family, he had to wait another day. He's a pro's pro.
He's a great guy. I like him.
He's one of the best. He's another guy that looks out for the up and coming writers. He's been very, very supportive and looking at my material and giving me notes and pointers, and he's a great guy.
Did you go to all the prep meetings as well?
I did, yes.
Nice. Yeah,
that's fun. That was actually a lot of fun. It's so cool to see, and it's interesting because as somebody who is still learning the business, it's really enriching to see all of these steps that go into this huge process. And the average person at home watching has no idea. No idea. I had no idea, and I work in the industry. But there are like so many meetings. There's a whole week of prep that we do. And you will go on scouts, you'll sit in on like visual effects meetings and storyboards and all the stuff that goes into the pre-process of filming. Mm-hmm. And then you have our episode was such a monster episode that it went to 11-day shoot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is the typical 8-day shoot for our show.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So an extra 3 days is quite a big thing. So there's a lot to learn and a lot to take in. But I think I came out at the other end all the better because of the support and the help from the writers and the crew and everybody. So it was great.
That's awesome.
Great experience, yeah.
The best prep meeting I ever went to was for John Badham's episode with the rat crawling across Allison in the tunnel. And there was a rat meeting where they brought in six rats and they were like, pick one and then pick an understudy, if you will.
Really?
Understudy.
Wow, yeah. And he's like, I like that one and that one's a good color. And
we had a crow meeting in a sense for the finale of season one.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because there was a live crow, but then there was a fake crow for other sections of it.
Sure.
And they're like, well, does the crow need 2 days? Or does it need 1 day to set up? You know, that kind of thing.
It's funny seeing like the prep schedule come out for each episode and some of the weird stuff that are specific to an episode, like the rat meeting was on a schedule and then it had to get moved around, and the production court is like, can you guys do the rat meeting at 2:30? Because, well, lunch falls then, and he has this other thing. Well, what time can the rats be here? And it's like, this is awesome. I can't believe we're getting paid to do this.
Yeah. No animals on my episode.
No.
I wouldn't have minded it.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a really cool bridge.
The tire bridge. We actually talked about this in the
DVD commentary?
Yes. So let me just tell you, the tire bridge, we created what was coined as the electric lake of death.
Listening.
So during an earthquake, a water main erupted, this car crashes, water main erupts, surrounds the car in this lake of electricity with the down power line flipping, flopping all in it.
Yeah.
And there was three people on board, no way to get these guys out. But to build a tire bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So production wanted to literally kill me. Because when we're in the writer's room, you know, we're just using our imaginations as best as we can to come up with the craziest things to throw at these characters. And production gets in and they're like, mother effer. Yeah. They just want to kill us but to their credit, they knock it out of the park every time. And so in our heads, a bridge of tires doesn't seem like it's, you know, a crazy thing. But when you really do the math, this is a 23-foot bridge. There were, I don't know, close to, I think, 30 tires on this thing. And when you actually start thinking about how much one tire actually weighs, this bridge is literally impossible to build.
Cool.
So production had to really do some crazy work on it. But it looks so good on film. Like, it came out amazing, and there's this great scene where Kat McPhee has to, you know, it's one of our character moments for the episode. She has to kind of use her special power, if you will, because, you know, we have each of our geniuses has a special power in a roundabout way, or a genius talent, if you will. And then hers is kind of we call her the super nanny to the geniuses, because they need somebody who has the emotional quotient to counter their intelligence quotient. So she has to then use her ability to get this guy off off the van in time because he's scared to death. He's going to fall in the electric lake of death and become toast. But then there's
valid fear.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And then there's this huge explosion, and it's just this great shot, and she like flies through the air, or stunt double. I don't remember which one it was. No, but it came out really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
It was a fun episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any advice you can give to young writers or anyone really trying to get into the industry?
Yes, don't do it because I need jobs and
right?
There's more
go away
coming in. Yeah, no. It's actually, you know, if I could say anything advice-wise that I've learned that I feel is beneficial is I've been told numerous times, be somebody that other people want to work with. Mm-hmm. And don't, you know, don't be fake, but be somebody who's not a douchebag, be somebody who people want to come in and work with you and be a part of a team with you. That's like half the battle. It really is. Yeah. I would say the other things are to work exceptionally hard, keep writing, write. If you're at home and you're farting around, not writing, then you're not really applying yourself. Because somebody out there is writing and they're writing harder than you are. Can you write harder? I guess if you push harder,
tap the keys harder.
I actually write really hard. I have like crazy indentions on my papers, but so we'll say type harder.
Sure.
But then you have broken keyboards.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah.
Or well, do.
More efficiently.
Because then if you break your keyboard, you can't write a script, and then that's a job opening for...
There you go. I like the way you think. No, but just...
I'm struggling.
But seriously, just working very hard and, you know, working towards getting representation. That's one of the biggest hurdles is getting the agent. And once you're able to get that, it kind of opens up another world for you. And then you're able to take all the material you worked exceptionally hard on and hard on. Who said that? Mom, don't listen. My mom's shaking her head right now.
Earmuffs.
Yes, earmuffs, Mom.
Rewind and then don't listen to that.
Rewind. Delete that part. But, you know, seriously, then you're able to take that material that you've worked exceptionally...
hard.
Exceptionally vigorously on.
Yeah.
Sure.
Can we say that?
Well, you've really pumped it out. It.
Yeah.
Wait, no.
Oh. Oh boy!
Yeah, it's getting.
You did a good job at it. Yeah. A bunch.
The material you did a really good job with.
Writers.
We're having writer's block trying to figure out another way.
Get the whiteboard in here.
Get the whiteboard.
Order pizza.
but then you know they're able to take that material and start shopping it around, start matching you up to potentially a show that you'd be a good fit for, and that's the other thing is writing material that you want to then be a part of. Because the odds of you getting something sold are slim to none. I believe Nick Santora told me a couple days ago some crazy statistic. It's like 0.5% of all the material submitted actually winds up becoming a series that lasts more than a season, which is a...
Sounds about right.
So 1 out of 200 things submitted. Essentially. That's math.
Hey, if you say so, I'm going
to... Well, I saw the grid last week of all of the pilots for the networks. I think it included CW, so ABC, CBS, NBC, and CBS.
Yeah.
And even that was like, it was pages and pages of pilots that were being shot, and you know that not all those are going to see the light of day. Most of them will never go out there. So even that's like, the odds are crazy.
That's a lot of money down the drain, too. Let me just throw that out there.
It's insane.
It's crazy, crazy town. But back to the point, it's really important to write what you want to then become a part of. Because, like I said, your material is probably... And not to discourage you, I mean, there's still a chance you could sell stuff. I mean, people sell stuff all the time. But just starting out, know that... Most of the time, those are going to be used as a sample for you to staff on something.
Yeah.
So you want to have a sample that's going to match up to, you know, if I were to write a sample that was akin to like The Flash, I wouldn't probably use that sample to then try to get on a show like SVU, Law and Order SVU, because they're just not similar in any way other than their dramas.
So would you say it's good advice to have a variety in your writing?
Well, yes and no. If the variety speaks to your skill set, then yes. Like, so if you can write a Law and Order SVU and you can write a Flash type of show or a spec script, then absolutely. If you're that talented, but I don't know that everybody necessarily has all of the gears to, like I've always been told, don't try to be a comedy and a drama writer. Yeah. Be one or the other. As you know, as much as we would all like to kind of do both, but you know, what do I know? I'm sure there are plenty of people that they can do both. But
what's his name? Lethal Weapon.
Matt Miller.
Yeah,
yeah.
Has done both.
Yeah, he was a writer on Chuck.
Yeah.
Yep.
And yeah, like I said, I'm sure it happens, but just from what I've been told, it's good to specialize. And know your strengths and kind of parlay those strengths into gigs that you'd be successful in. Because the worst thing you can do is maybe get lucky with writing this. Like, I probably couldn't do an SVU script. So if I got lucky enough and I hit one out of the park, I would probably wouldn't last very long on the show, and I'd be doing myself a disservice and the show a disservice.
Right.
Because I'm not going to be able to blossom and grow with a show like that.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody from SVU is listening, I only said that as an example. I feel like I really could write excellent scripts for SVU.
1-800-DICK-WOLF. I don't know who's supposed to call that number. I don't know why I said that. I just...
267-225-CHAT.
It's probably not a good number for anybody to call. 1-800-DICK and then...
WLF, maybe?
Yeah. Kids, don't try that number. It's just going to lead to bad things.
Or 1-900-DICK-WOLF.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's true. It's also, I think, worth noting that it's not like you come out here and there's your favorite show on the air and you're like, oh, I want to write for that show. Like, most of the time, that's not going to happen. You know, I'm sure, you know, if people come out and they're like, I want to write on The Walking Dead.
Yeah, we get in line.
Yeah, yeah, like...
There's like 10 people in a writer's room, typically, on the high end. 8 to 10, I believe, is kind of the norm. And
how many do we have at Scorpion?
We have 10. Yeah, we have pretty good size. Yeah.
That is a good... Yeah. It's a decent amount of people.
Yeah, a lot of brains.
Mm-hmm.
And they, trust me, they churn out the ideas like crazy. Yeah. But, I mean, you have to especially on a 22, or we had 24 episodes this year.
That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, that's a lot of cranking.
Especially for a procedural show where it's like we have to come up with something new every week.
It's interesting, though, because I never, coming out, like you said, when you come out, you want to write for a specific show. I was all about Lost. That was like my, I came out here the year after it ended, and I was so bummed. Not that I'd ever have a chance, but, you know, I'm a huge J.J. Abrams fan, all those guys. But then Breaking Bad became my favorite after that. But
as it should.
As it should. I was going somewhere with this. And
but you can't write for your favorite show.
You can't write for your favorite show.
And then you got here and you felt very lost.
I feel lost right now. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was a point in there somewhere.
You liked Breaking Bad.
That's the point. Is I just you wanted like to really kind of throw out what I liked as my favorite shows.
That's good.
Breaking Bad's fantastic.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, that's my favorite series. I think it was just masterfully written from beginning to end. So the first hour sample that I wrote, that was sort of the tone that I was going for, because that's the style of show that I would want to write.
Exactly.
So I feel like it's not like I was going to get on Breaking Bad, but, you know, if you have something that's in that world that sort of fits that style. 100%. And then I got into Fargo and I wrote a sample that was kind of similar to Fargo, which is hard to do, but
Fargo similar. Is one of my favorite shows. I actually feel that Fargo picked up the reins of Breaking Bad as far as masterful television.
It's so good.
It's just bonkers good. And
Have you watched season two?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, season two is great.
It's must-see TV for me. I watch it live when I can just because it's that good. I mean, even this season with, like, the crazy alien twist, it was so great. Like, only Fargo could pull that off, I think. And they do it masterfully every time. That's a great one. Of course, Better Call Saul picking up, you know, with the Breaking Bad universe, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
The People versus OJ.
I just started it today.
I just finished it yesterday.
I'm 2 in, and I'm like so into it.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
What? Still, he's not guilty.
He's not guilty.
Or is he?
I have my own opinion.
Yeah.
I think everyone on the planet.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing about that show, though, is they do an exceptional job of kind of painting both sides. Like, you could...
Yeah.
There's some points
to
in
a
the
degree.
Show. Yes,
yeah.
To a degree where you can kind of say, well, holy cow, I can see why they voted, or not voted, but whatever the jury does. They deliberated
They vote in a sense.
Yeah.
They say one way or the other.
You know, the election's just in my head these days. So, but yeah, they dropped the verdict that they did, and they paint a really good picture of why perhaps it could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all know what the
I'm just saying the DNA evidence doesn't lie.
The DNA.
Yeah, but if the glove doesn't fit, you have
to
acquit.
To go.
Well, you know what? That's bullshit.
That does kind of rhyme.
Well, they go into all You'll get all that in the show. And the Sarah Paulson, who plays Marsha Clark.
So good.
There's this one episode called Marsha, and if she doesn't win Best Actress in a miniseries, then we'll riot. And then Courtney B. Vance is in another episode. Well, I mean, they're just both stellar all the way through. But if he doesn't win, we're going to riot as well. So
cool.
Mark it on your calendars.
You know a show I just finished watching. It's on Sundance. I don't know if many of you get Sundance Channel, but it's called Happen Leonard.
Maybe that's where you were going to go.
It's a very good show.
I've heard really good things about it. I have not had the chance. I don't even know what channel Sundance Channel is.
I don't know either.
You can
get it on demand.
Yeah. Have you seen any vinyl?
I haven't watched any vinyl. My plate. I can't even, this is crazy.
That's fine. Palate works.
My palate needs to be cleansed, but that's not what I was going to say. My plate has been so full.
You should drink coffee. That usually does it.
I've just been trying really hard to kind of work on my material, and I put time aside for the shows that I know I love and that I want to tune into. My DVR is constantly on the fritz of you know, being at 100% and exploding on me at any given moment. So it's a desperate battle to kind of keep it, you know, to keep it from deleting all my backlog stuff. But I've heard good things about vinyl.
The pilot. If Scorsese is listening, you're a great director. That pilot was 17 hours long, I'm sure of it. I kept looking outside and, like, I don't know, just daydreaming. It's a very long pilot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was good. Probably won't watch anymore.
Well, Scorsese series that I do love is Boardwalk Empire. That's just... Talk about period piece. They knocked that one out of the park.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how people... There are some people who just seem to have seen every show, and I don't know how they do it, and still, like, have time to go outside.
Well,
I do it on the treadmill.
Nick Santora literally has seen every single movie and television show imaginable.
Really?
But he doesn't sleep.
I find that about a lot of showrunners.
Yeah.
Mine is the same way. We'd get emails at, like, 3 in the morning. And we'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Well, just this past week, he was telling me he's up writing. He stays up and writes. The guy's a machine.
Yeah.
He writes features, books, children's books.
I have to read a Nick Santora children's book.
It was a Christmas.
Christmas.
Yeah. Christmas book.
I want an alien for Christmas. Yeah.
There you go, Andrew.
All right.
Put that in your stocking stuffer for next year.
I have to put it in my own stocking?
Yeah, because I'm not buying it for you.
Why not?
Well, I should support
Do you think you could get a free copy?
I might get you an autographed copy.
No.
You'd have to pay for it. There's no way he'd give you a free copy.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for the book, what? But what about the autograph?
He'll give you the autograph for free, for sure.
That's what I'm thinking.
We gave him 2 hours of our time. We drove.
It's more like three.
I was going to say, I heard it was three.
We drove all the way to, it was halfway to San Francisco, I think, is where we met him. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'll read it. Do you write? Do you have a schedule that you write on, mornings versus evenings or middle of the night? Or
I don't.
Just whenever.
I don't feel like I get the most writing done at night unless I'm up against a deadline and I'm just basically doing it the whole day. Yeah. I feel much more creative in the mornings or during the day where it's light outside. I know it sounds kind of cliche because the light brings creativity to the writer, but it really does for me. I even like sitting outside or listening to some. I just found recently I've been listening to music, movie scores. But
that's what I do.
I love. See, for me, movie scores. If you're doing an intense battle scene, then you put on Gladiator, Bravehearts, something exactly. that emulates that scene in your head from what you've seen before. But I found now that the white noise that I go to sleep with totally clears my head, 100%. It's the craziest thing. Because even with the movie scores, some of the music's so powerful that it kind of, at least the way my stupid complicated brain works, it'll kind of start creeping into my thought pattern. I'm like, oh, let me turn the music down. It's getting distracting.
Yeah.
But with the white noise, it's just I listen to waves and rain and thunderstorm.
Interesting.
And it just totally clears the palate.
Nice.
I'm gonna try that.
I use the palette.
And I think cleanse. I'm not a writer. I listen to that when I go to bed sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do the same thing when I go to bed. My wife and I both we have our competing white noise on our phones. She's like, I don't like your thunderstorms on yours, so
it's the best.
The thunderstorms are great.
Yeah.
Do you use an app for that? Or is it just
there is an app for that?
Okay,
yeah. It's I'll give it to you after this.
All right.
It's something sounds. I don't know, but it's so great, and it's great because there's five or six screens, and there's 10 different sounds on each screen, and they can all play together.
Oh,
simultaneously.
So you can mix your own score
What?
Yeah. Sound mixing.
Oh, the future.
That's amazing.
The future is now.
Yeah.
Future is now.
Now we just need to get those self-driving cars and we'll be good.
They're around.
I don't have one.
Well, I don't know.
Didn't one get in an accident?
Yeah, it did.
Something recently?
What, really?
Yeah. It was going pretty slow, but it was one of the Google Priuses. It might have, I don't know.
I think it was one of the Google cars, yeah.
Hmm.
Well. It might have been while we were at Google. I may have tampered with their...
All right, well, we got to go.
very quickly.
Matt, do you have a Twitter account?
I have a Twitter account.
Do you use said Twitter account?
I use it whenever I have something big to announce in my life, which isn't very often.
Yeah.
But,
this podcast will be
totally
huge.
Oh, this is mad. I just Facebooked it before I started. It was my first ever podcast.
Nice.
And I even dropped the name of the podcast on there. And
sweet.
I said,
sweet.
Yes.
I believe it is, I don't even know what it is. Can I look it up?
Yeah.
You can cheat. It's not cheating, it's just looking.
Yeah, you're looking at the phone.
Matt, in your hand.
Star Wars guy.
Star Wars guy.
But it's a Z instead of an S.
Sorry.
Both of those together?
It's a mouthful.
That's a mashup.
Leia's real boyfriend, 1980.
Leia's real boy. Okay, so it's...
Trouble with Tribbles. I know. I realize that's not...
It's I Kissed My Sister in the Star Wars... No, I'm just kidding. It's, that's a Star Wars joke. At Matthew J. Davis, 78. That's Matthew with two T's.
78. Is that your football number?
No, that was the year I was born.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
Football, 44 was my football number.
78 was mine.
44 is the year I was born.
Yeah.
You were born 78? Or that was your football number?
That was my football number.
Okay. So
I was born in 80.
So, okay. So we're not too far off there.
Mm-mm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said yours was 44. That was when you were born?
That's the year I was born. It was 44.
You look very good for...
I can still play 16, according to my agent, so...
You're like 85 or something.
Quite well.
Maybe more. Let's see. I don't know.
No, my dad was born in 1940, and he's like 76.
So he had you when he was four. That's something.
Yeah, well, that's impressive.
That's very impressive.
Yeah.
Most impressive.
Andrew, you have a Twitter account, don't you?
I do. I'm blowing up on Twitter.
Really? I got like two followers the other day. I was
Did you?
Yeah, I don't
know. Well, I found because
of Oscar celebration.
Yeah.
I've started tweeting at myself from the band account, which has way more followers than I do.
You're cheating.
Yeah.
Why don't you tweet me from the band account?
I will.
Okay.
I have to say something about you, like,
all right.
What's the
thanks? Thanks for showing up for the show.
Yeah,
there you go.
You have to give me the history on the band account. What's this?
Andrew is in a band.
I'm in a band, and we have our band is made up mostly of Nickelodeon stars. So they
nice,
have
nice like, enough people is the name of the
band. Yeah. So they've got like millions of followers on Twitter, and I have like 600. So
you want to share the wealth? I get it.
Yeah.
I would totally cheat the system and do what you're doing.
I do. I'm doing on Instagram too. I don't care. I log into our account. I'm like, follow me. I'm awesome. And then those million people go over and follow my music. Anyway, I'm at The Real Zuber.
Right. And I'm at JJ Geiger 711.
Nadav's at Very Nadav Show.
You always remember. I can't remember his, but he can't remember the phone number.
What is that phone number, JJ?
267-225-2428.
267-225-CHAT?
Yeah.
Our Oklahoma City number.
That's actually Philadelphia.
Oklahoma City. OKC.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Hey, I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Really?
Are you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
I went there. I went there once, and I was like, I got to get a cheesesteak because that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to a cheesesteak place on a corner, got a cheesesteak, walked over, saw the Liberty Bell, which is broken, by the way. I don't know why they don't
fix
glue
that.
It back together.
Yeah.
Walked back. The cheesesteak place was gone.
That was a
like literally,
shop.
We realized it was a trailer, and we didn't know that. Oh. And it was like the street was empty, and we're like, "Oh, the restaurant Bummer. Got towed away."
Weird.
I think they just closed. Anyway, it was fun.
Yeah, Philadelphia is quite beautiful in parts and quite scary in others.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Well, at our Philadelphia number, you can text us. You can leave a voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much
Someone's
it.
Someone's mom in Philadelphia literally answers the phone. We pay a lady.
Hello?
This is the early call time podcast. I don't know why she has it.
I don't know either.
Anyway.
But we, you know, if people leave messages, we can play them on the air, which is always nice.
Oh. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
We're tuned into the community.
People can also email us at earlycalltime@gmail.com.
They can follow us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And
early call time.
Yeah, at early call time. We have an Instagram account, which
that's early call time.
Yeah, which is basically littered with cat pictures of Frankie.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe we should take some pictures today. I don't know.
We're on Facebook.
We are.
That's at early call time.
Yep.
If you go outside and you yell early call time,
people will have no idea what you're doing.
You see half the neighborhood run, oh my God, I'm late for my call time. Everybody's in the industry out here.
That's true.
That's right.
Early call.
JJ, I don't know if you knew this, but I don't think you hit record.
Oh.
We haven't been recording this whole time.
Oh, no.
We don't actually record these.
This is terrible.
This is all just for fun.
Yeah.
It's all dry runs.
Yeah.
A little kid that we hired is stealing your hubcaps right now.
Son of a gun.
Yep.
Darn you, little kid.
This is how we make our money. You like these floors, huh? What do you think paid for them?
I do. I told JJ.
This isn't the March of Dimes.
Fun fact that I love the floors here.
It's the March of Hubcaps.
The March of Hubcaps.
They're like dimes. They're just much larger.
Right.
And they sell for more.
Do people sell hubcaps? I mean, that was like a big thing in the 80s and the 70s, right? I don't know. People would
There's
hubcaps.
Like the spinner ones that I'm sure are super expensive.
Well, those are rims.
Oh, is that different than?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, hubcaps are just like the thing that goes over the wheel, the tire
right.
of the wheel.
But can't you get that instead of? I mean, can't
you get
the fancy ones?
You could take off the tires.
If you have a rim, though, you wouldn't have a hubcap, like a designer rim, like one that you'd actually spend money on.
Yeah. If it was chrome or gold, you would say no, I don't want the hubcap. But if you did. You'd be an idiot.
I'm going to pass. No, you know what? I want the hubcap to cover my gold rims.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
I got to hide those
that
when I'm at the Staples Center or something.
Why the Staples Center?
I don't know. Because it's a large amount of people.
What are you doing at the Staples Center?
Watching
what are you
a
going
basketball
to see?
Game?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Over there.
What?
your gold rims. Or, well, is it 14 karat gold, or is it, because 24 is probably a little too malleable to have
probably. A rim. I would imagine that it's just it's coated.
You know, it's probably like, 10 karat because 10 karat's a it's a alloy of some sort.
Huh.
I think it's like silver and gold together, maybe.
Hmm.
Let's go with that.
Sure.
I'm a writer's assistant, so I don't know what gold is.
I don't know what gold is.
Well, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, this was great. It was my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah. This is super fun. And then hopefully one day I'll be an actual writer and you'll have me back.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. Maybe you just be like, F that guy.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, he was terrible the first time. He's not going to be any better the second.
Just stop recording and then hit delete right away. Thanks. This isn't really what we were looking for.
That is brutal.
But that's
Hollywood. That's Hollywood in a
that's
show.
How you learn.
Whatever you want.
Hollywood in a...
Yeah, let's do that again.
No, man, not even like...
That was just the first take, right, guys?
Yeah,
we do three takes from multiple angles.
Right.
Multiple angles.
And then we're going to periscope this.
Can you film from down up?
To make you look evil?
Give me the best angle
like
possible.
Like low lighting?
Get like a, you know, double chin going, all the good stuff.
We can do that.
Well, without further ado.
What?
What should the listeners do?
Oh, that was a rhyme.
Well, we take Bitcoin donations, so I feel like... And I just watched a documentary with Morgan Spurlock about Bitcoin, so I know how to do it now.
Yeah.
So
you're going to dedicate a computer to mine Bitcoin?
Yeah, all it is figuring out algorithms.
Yeah.
Well, that's easy enough.
Yeah, right?
That's all we do in our show.
Yeah, they should do an episode where they mine Bitcoin.
And there's only a certain number. There's like 24 million that'll ever be made. So
like gold.
Yeah.
It's finite.
Yeah. So you get it while you can. Go to Iceland, set up a bay of servers in an air-conditioned room.
Oh, some yellow thing coming.
Uh-oh.
That's okay. I guess you should go get your Bitcoin, donate it to us, earlycalltime.com, listen to the outro.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at craft services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.